Tackling trauma can be a long and arduous process for victims and service providers alike. And according to Mental Health Australia, trauma is a major public health problem, with 5 million Australian adults currently affected by childhood trauma. In the last episode of Speaking Out, we brought you the story of how the Healing Foundation is working to address the impact of intergenerational trauma on Indigenous families who are still dealing with the legacy of the stolen generations. But looking more broadly, some academics are concerned with the ongoing impact of colonialism and racism on First Nations people, and they're calling for more culturally appropriate services to deal with the symptoms of the resulting trauma. Associate Professor Leonie Pahama is the director of the Te Katahi Research Institute at the University of Waikato, and I also have with me Maori researcher Rihi Tanana. Welcome to the program.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Rihi, how common is trauma amongst First Nations populations, and how does it differ from trauma in the broader community?
Trauma for most Indigenous nations is very common, especially when the machinery that has basically incited the trauma has been colonisation. You know, for us, one of the things about doing this work and actually having people like Leonie and Linda Smith beside us is that we could grow our language around trauma, Indigenous trauma, and the impact of historical and intergenerational trauma on us as a people, on us as nations. And really, that was important in order to develop a backstory, to develop the story of understanding of how we've arrived to be so traumatised in this day and age. So that history of looking at how our ancestors were traumatised and then viewing it from how that has impacted on us has made a big difference into the way in which we articulate the healing process. And I think that's critical because all Indigenous nations have their own processes of healing, and so we can address that. So a good example is that when our ancestors had their language deliberately taken from them, we know that in our nations, in Māori nations, that speaking our language, understanding our customs, bringing back our ancestors' ways of thinking and being, heal us. So we look, the saying is, you look to the past in order to move forward. So it is quite critical. And that seems to be a common thread across all Indigenous nations, that the wisdom of ancestor is the medicine of today.
One of the issues that we spoke about on the show last week was the need to convince policymakers that intergenerational trauma is actually a real issue that needs to be addressed. Is that what you see as well in your work?
Absolutely, absolutely. In recent studies, we know that for us Māori and tribal nations, the legislation from 1860s to now, and I'm talking about the Care of Children and Protection legislation, was pitched towards us, pitched towards taking our children. So from 1860s to now, there's 37 pieces of legislation, which all quietly but single-mindedly take that opportunity to marginalise the way in which we can, be a family, look after our children, the ways in which we think about parenting. So, you know, parenting as opposed to child-rearing practices. So all those pieces of legislation have, one by one, taken a piece of that. So today we have a ministry who basically tells us when it's not good parenting, as opposed to taking any advice around healthy, traditional ways of childcare and child rearing. They assume a position of authority. And for, like here in Australia, our biggest fear for our people, having your children taken from you without consent and without a position to actually, you know, hold where they have a say in that process.
Leonie, we're talking about complex issues, including mental health and, in many cases, substance addiction. Why don't mainstream or conventional approaches work for First Nations trauma victims?
Mm. I think what we're seeing in the work we're doing at the moment, the trauma-informed care. So the trauma-informed care approach is an approach that, you know, they've used in Europe and, you know, in Britain particularly, and the States for a very long time, like 30 years. And has shown clearly on Turtle Island that it doesn't work for Indigenous nations. And so now in Aotearoa, we're always kind of a little bit later in imposing these Western models, but it's now a big model both in the healthcare and in the kind of mental health and addiction space. And, you know, part of what we're doing with this project is trying to run intervention before it gets too embedded. What that model does is it focuses on an individual. And it focuses on an individual in a trauma impact in this moment without any context, without any historical context, without any cultural context or social context, and definitely without any collective relationships. And so what we know is that when our people are removed as individuals and taken away for healing or rehabilitation of some form or any form, and the removal from community, that they may experience some change in the addiction, but often it's short term, and then often they are kind of released, in inverted commas, into the world from that process with really no support systems around them, with no reconnection to their cultural frameworks, with no reconnection to land. And so what we're saying is that this kind of individualized neoliberal approach to an individual as a kind of site for market health, you know, interventions, it's never worked for our people in the past, and it's not going to work now with this new model. That the kind of cultural interventions that work for our people that we are very aware of are collective, so they're about healing community in order to heal all the individuals inside community. That doesn't mean that you don't take into account a contemporary trauma, but if we're not dealing with the kind of ancestral trauma, with the collective trauma of disconnection, with the collective trauma of being homeless. So homelessness is one really good example that we're kind of both working in different ways at the moment. So for our people, and as Lihi has said before, homelessness did not begin with overpopulation in Auckland City for our people. For our people, homelessness began with landlessness. The first act of homelessness for Indigenous people is the act of the removal of land. And so we've been culturally homeless, many of our people, for 200 years. So in that context, you can't go and put an individual in the house and change that broader picture. So the individual healing has to be in a context of collective healing and in a context of social justice and reconnection. Disconnection is one of the critical components of, you know, being unwell for our people.
Rihi, I just wonder if you could elaborate on your thoughts on the role that culture and its revitalisation play in healing the trauma experienced by colonised people.
The research and most Māori practitioners in Aotearoa New Zealand know and will tell everybody that, you know, when our land was taken from us, when our language was taken from us, when we had legislations that forbade us to practice our cultural ways, those were clear markers of unwellness. Because without those critical ways of practice, one's identity became immediately marginalised. And what we do know with a Māori practice is that when a Māori whānau actually has an opportunity to heal, the healing begins in returning to that space where they know who they are. So who am I? Who are my people? Where do they reside? You know, where were their lands? And in that moment, there's a big opportunity for them to say, this is me. I am Rihi. I come from the Whanganui River, and these are the lands of my people. And for most of our people, and that's probably 80% of our nations, Māori nations, our people don't know those. So when we're dealing with mental health issues or drug-related issues or issues of homelessness, one of the most common threads that are in those, you know, the huge bowl of those issues of unwellness is the same response comes from the people who said, I don't know who I am. So, and our ancestors told us, when you don't know who you are, you have nowhere to stand. You have nowhere to anchor yourself. When you do know where you're from, you begin a healing process so profound that it heals your ancestors to some degree. Mm. The bigger the work, it heals them, and then it creates a pathway for those to come, because that unwellness stops at you. And there's another, you know, there's another narrative, there's another pūrākau for our children, our grandchildren, and all those generations to come, because they have, I am from this tribe, and I belong to these people, and my lands, my traditional lands are here. So that's the power of, you know, really returning to a very indigenous, solid practice of identity and a journey of wellness.
Can I just add, when we talk about disconnection in that way, we're talking about a disconnection that is an ancestral disconnection that we experience today. So in our experience of trauma and our experience of depression, whatever it is, whatever wound it is that we carry, it is often a wound that has come from an ancestral wound. So we've been really fortunate to have been guided in a lot of work by Native scholars, you know, and healers like Karina Walters and Eduardo Duran and Bonnie Duran, who talk about the soul wound, and the soul wound as an ancestral memory that all Indigenous people carry, because we know that we carry past, present, future simultaneously as we sit in this room. And so if we're carrying past wounds, it is our role in this generation, if we're aware of that, to try to heal that wound so that the future that we're carrying is a different future to the wound of the past that we've carried. And so what we try to do is kind of raise an awareness too with our people around thinking about, as you sit here as an ancestor today and as a grandchild of your ancestors, what are the wounds that we need to heal within ourselves and within our collectives in order that our children and grandchildren are not having to carry the same wound into the future. So there's around changing that kind of that historical narrative from a historical trauma narrative to a historical well-being. So we started talking more, less about trauma-informed care and more about healing-informed care, because I think that's an Indigenous view, is about healing-informed care. And we all in the group have been very conscious about what are the wounds that we carry. And we know that we carry them, because as individuals we feel them impacting us every day. And what do we need to do to heal them as a part of this bigger Māori healing collective movement that is happening? And, you know, and we've been really fortunate, I think, to have had Indigenous people do some really incredible trauma work, before we've got to this point. And so we've got a really great, we've got a great deal of healing and thinking and literature that we can draw on.
My final question tonight is, this is really hard work and it's very personal work, but what are the moments in working in this area where you find the hope or the inspiration?
I think it lies within when you see Māori whānau families take hold of their agency, take hold of their world, and rather than reacting to that, their world, they're determining their world. And in the work that we've been doing in the homeless space, and the practitioners are all Māori, it's done at a marae, this piece of work, you can see inherently that the whānau themselves know what they want. They absolutely know what they want. They don't need anyone to tell them, and they don't need any advice from 10 agencies. They know really clearly what they want. They also know when it's time to let go and they can carry on. The critical thing with this piece of work in our space and, you know, working to house our people who are homeless is that they always know there's a hand there or, you know, a marae, a group of people who, if things get a bit shaky, they can go back. They can go back and say, hey, things are a bit shaky, we just need a bit of support. And also the people who work there, the workers there also know, let's go have a cup of tea. You know, they might not have seen them for 6 months. And so there's these cup of tea biscuit visits. And that's not to check them out. That's just to say, hey, we're still here. How's it going? But, you know, they're Māori. They understand that we don't work in silos. Our whānau should be in great bigger collectives where we can support one another. And so they never really give up that relationship with the family. It is an enduring relationship, and it may start in a very precarious way when they're homeless, but it carries on to being a relationship, kānohiki te kānohi, that's what we call it, a functional relationship. That we don't have to see them every week. We can see them once or twice a year. And they in turn know they can come back if they feel like they need a bit of advice and extra support. So there are lots of ways when we know, you know, when we do things the way our old people worked collectively and looked after each other, there is really no better healing than that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, definitely with the kind of, when whānau take their own power back, that's what we're about, right? We're about trying to seek in a broader picture self-determination. That's what Tino Langa Tira Tanga is about. Collective self-determination, whether that be collectively an extended family or whether it be collectively a nation. So there's that part. And the other part for me, which is kind of my academic part, is when we really battle, because I think a lot of what we do as academics and scholars is to change the discourse and have that impact in that kind of policy governmental space. And so for 10 years, we've been working with Karina and Cheryl Smith and a whole range of other people around embedding this idea of historical trauma events, historical trauma theory, intergenerational trauma theory. And now for the first time in the Family Violence Workforce Development Plan, there is a whole area around developing an understanding of historical trauma. So, you know, that kind of change up that happens in the discourse, whether they really know what that means, I'm not sure. But that impact, 10 years ago, you would never have seen that. And so I think that we have a role in our research work to be running interventions in the way in which things are talked about, the ways in which our people are talked about, and creating a new story, new discourse. And so when we realise the impact of that, in the last couple of years, and hearing people say historical trauma, we're taking the historical trauma event alongside a kaupapa Māori approach, you know, we start to realise the level of impact we've made. And so actually that's a part of our work that we're increasing now. So we're being very deliberate about that part of it now.
Well, thank you both so much for being with us this evening on Speaking Out.
Yeah, no, it's lovely to be here.
Especially nice to have you back, Associate Professor Leonie Pahama, who was one of our voices for NAIDOC Week because of her we can. My guests this evening have been Associate Professor Leonie Pahama, who is the Director of the Te Kotahi Research Institute at the University of Waikato, and her colleague, Māori researcher Rihi Tanana.